Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Welcome to The Weekly Connect, the show that gives blind and partially sighted people a voice in the world. This week we're getting ourselves into the festive spirit with the second of two special episodes from a recent RNIB Connect event held in Windermere. Joining me this week once again is my special guest, RNIB's community facilitator for the northwest of England, Danielle Colcombe. Hi Danielle.
Hi Stephen.
So how do you prepare for Christmas, Danielle?
I don't, and then I just panic at the last minute.
I thought that's what every guy did. I had this feeling that women were a bit more organised than men.
I used to be very organised with Christmas, and then, I don't know, something happened. Maybe I got a life or something. I don't know. It's work. I'll say it's all down to work. I'm just very busy.
Okay, so everyone in your family can look forward to Christmas presents from a service station, probably around about 11 o'clock at night, you bought them.
Yeah, because when me and my husband will drive up to the northeast, is where I'm from, and yeah, you're right, we'll probably get all the gifts on the way up there.
Makes perfect sense to me.
It does.
Well, the Connect members certainly seem to enjoy themselves at the recent Connect Northwest event in Windermere. There was certainly lots of laughter and fun to be had for sure. And of course, for most of us, the real joy of Christmas, let's be honest, is in what we end up eating on the big day. So therefore, the blind biscuit tasting sessions seemed quite appropriate, didn't they, Danielle?
Yeah, it was a great idea. I think Rachel came up with that one, and it was executed perfectly by Suzanne.
But what I do like is it was a blind tasting and no one was wearing a blindfold because they didn't need to. But yeah, it was really good fun. And as you say, Rachel and Suzanne did a great job of setting it up and executing that. So, and it certainly seemed as if everyone seemed to enjoy themselves.
Okay, so first one is a biscuit. It's on a green plate and they're going to be brought around now. If you want to have a try and guess as to what the flavour is.
No, well, I'm going to go for that one.
For what one?
I'm going to hear it, so don't get right there. Oh,
watch out. Oh, that's shortbread with chocolate chips in, isn't it? That's what I was thinking, yeah. Oh, it's got something else in. Got a tang with it, hasn't it?
Cinnamon,
no. What's that tang with it?
Is it cinnamon?
No. No, there's a taste with it.
Is it?
Very, very nice, anyway. We won't need any dinner after this, will we? We've had lunch and biscuits and crisps and Boddington's.
Well, it's something in it. What is it? Well, was it flavouring? I don't know.
It's not ginger. Could be ginger.
No, it's not ginger. I'd go with cinnamon. I'll go with you.
Yeah, go
cinnamon.
On. Yeah, well,
I'd go with cinnamon.
Go on then.
Cinnamon, I don't think it's chocolate. It's more currants in it. Mm.
Okay, the answer is Christmas pudding. Are you ready for your next biscuit?
Yeah.
Okay, you're getting a yellow plate this time. Same biscuit halves. You have to guess the flavour.
Well, I don't know about you, Danielle, but I have to say the mince pie biscuits that came later were my favourite. I had absolutely no idea such a thing even existed.
Yeah, and it's great. And who needs to actually buy the pies when you can just have the biscuits, right?
Well, it saves a lot of time, doesn't it? It saves you having to buy biscuits and mince pies.
Exactly.
You've got it all fused together. Absolutely brilliant. Well done to everyone involved for setting that up, and in particular to volunteer Suzanne for reading out and organising it all. Great job there. Now, last week, you might remember, we met Stephen, Danny and Christine, all from the Greater Manchester area. They talked about their experience of using white canes. Now, this week, we hear more of that conversation in two parts. The first is a rather lively discussion on the topic of personal responsibility. There is so much talk in the blind community about other people not fully understanding our needs, but how much of that is on us? Could we all do a little bit more to make sure our lives are that bit easier and help others in the way? Well, let's hear what Stephen, Danny and Christine think in what became a rather lively conversation.
I don't carry a white cane because I find it disables me. I don't wear the dark glasses because I find it disables me. I find, exactly. I find it attracts too much attention to me, and my experience has been negative. But I do carry a little card which says, "Partially sighted, please help." This is something which I found in my late father's possessions when he went blind, and I don't know where he got it from. It's a little laminated card, and it says, "Partially sighted, please help." So I flash this little card at things like railway stations and so on, bus stations, to get help. And I found that when I went on holiday alone for the first time in, well, I can't say when, 30 years recently, to show that little card was good, but not always. Mm. For example, I was left by the bus driver of a well-known coach holiday firm in Scotland recently, in quite a remote place. I did tell him that I'm going for a walk with my friend. We might be some time coming back. Please wait for us. We'll only be a minute or two late, if at all. He set off without us. And there we were, the Isle of Bute, 10 miles from town. Actually, we were big, strong girls, and we could walk it back into town, but we might have been frail old ladies and still be there. And when I got back to the hotel, I just showed them a card, and I said, you do know this. You've got a copy of the card. The company has a copy of the card. I think you need to just do something about this, because the fact that we sorted it out is actually all credit to us, and about zero to you, really. And there is a personal responsibility in all of this, and you've got to work out your own way. But when it comes to councils, I think they can't possibly know all the millions of people who live there. This now is up to you, or your advocate, raise it to them, because they don't know, and they don't necessarily know what to do, and that's why the RNIB's Ask and Tell programme is brilliant. Ask for help, tell what you want, and then see what develops. You've given the chance to be a nice person. If they aren't, you just clock it for next time, yeah?
A lot of ways you're taking the personal responsibility, but in your own way, you know. So each people, like myself, I'm very upfront with, nowadays I am, many years on, but I get involved with guide dog speaking. I go out to schools and talk to children and cub packs, etc., about guide dogs and being visually impaired. Mm. And it's an amazing, uplifting feeling to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great service that the guide dog people do. Mm. And also, I think in all types of situations, if you're willing to be upfront, if you will take that personal responsibility, and again, it's not easy sometimes to do that. Mm. Another little example, I remember after the case I told you about before, where the ladies on the train, you know, were rather rude to me, but it was when I used to travel on two buses and a train to work, and initially I used to I had a little bit of sign, I folded my cane in my pocket, and I had an incident where I had a little bit of an accident. I thought, well, I better start carrying my cane, and I got on the local station, and because I have a little bit of sight, I found the door and I found my seat. And the train was packed, and there was two ladies walked past and said, "Oh, there's that guy that pretends he can't see." And at that stage, I must have gone beetroot red. I wanted to get off at the next stop and just fold myself in a corner somewhere.
That's
but
so
after that, you know, I now could challenge that. I would have challenged, you know, if it happens to me now, I would have challenged that, no matter where it was. I would have challenged what they said. But it happened to me I was walking, following a line of shops, and I bumped into an old lady, and a guy said to me, "You, what did you do that for? You saw that lady there, didn't you?" And I turned around to him and I actually challenged him, and I said, "What do you know about my eye condition? Can you see? I have a white cane for a reason." And he backed off. Mm. You know, it's... I think sometimes it's the way you talk to people as well, isn't it? And most people, if you're quite happy to explain that in some circumstances you can see the door handle, and other circumstances with the at that stage, it was night blindness was the main problem. You know, I couldn't see hardly anything at night. Mm. So people don't understand that, do they? Yeah, so you have to explain to them. And that's where the personal responsibility comes into it.
It's easy to say, oh, let's go, we got our cane, and use our cane. But it's difficult to fight the feeling you get, the psychological effect you feel.
You are right, Danny, yeah.
And that make you stop going out. Okay. You become your own prisoner at home.
Yeah.
Because of that, of thinking of it. Also, your way of thinking, but we don't actually know what the other person feeling toward us. But sometimes when some incident happens, that stays deeply in our heart, our brain still. So it stops us to continue with that. But because at long run, we have to use it. We have to do it. Because as far as now, I can see it's very distance now, because only recently I stopped driving. I'll try to manage without taking. I don't want to be affected that badly psychologically. But as soon as time comes, I have to use it. I'm going to use it.
Have you thought about guide dogs, Danny?
No.
You don't have to have lost all your sight to have a guide dog. And sometimes I found it, because I've got a guide dog now, it's more, in a way, socially acceptable to be visually impaired with a guide dog. People tend to be more aware, more friendly, simply because of the four-legged friend you've got by the side of you. And again, guide dogs are not for everyone, and it's not the easiest way. You know, white canes have their place and guide dogs have their place, and I mix and match with both depending on the circumstance, but you know, it's another option.
Yeah, to have a guide dog is another responsibility. If you can manage that responsibility to look after the guide dog and after yourself, and think, especially if you, now I got my wife to help me for quite a little things, but if you got the dog, you have to look after the dog, care for the dog, do everything like I'm doing. I know it's a good help, but I hope I won't have reached that stage yet. But I'm going in the long run, it's going to happen, lose my sight. As doctor said, the specialist said, slowly I'm going to lose, don't know when, but I'll keep it that way. If I need to use a white stick, I'll use it.
Yeah.
I would use a guide dog, but for my age now, and I don't think it would be fair on the dog at my time of life to have a dog. I'm 70 now, and so, well, time's winged charities.
There's some guide dog owners who are in their 80s.
You're absolutely right, but the relationship you have with the dog is quite special, and I speak as a dog lover who lost her dog last year, and I decided then I wouldn't have another because it broke my heart when she died within a few weeks of my husband.
So I
couldn't go through that again. But what Danny says is right, you do lose your confidence, and there is a lot of difference, I think, if whether you live alone or not. I live alone, and I have very few family within hundreds of miles of me. It's just the way things have worked out. I've got very good friends who support me, but of course it's not like having someone living with you to look after you, and I think that creates a whole series of different problems which you have to deal with. And I would be thinking with a guide dog, well, if anything happened to me, for example, I became so incapacitated that I was unable to look after the dog, the situation could arise where people might not even be aware of that, and the dog would now be suffering. And if that sounds a little bit precious, then, well, that's just how I feel, really.
Yeah, again, it's your personal thought, isn't it? So, yeah.
Absolutely right from Stephen there. It is Christine's view, and she is perfectly entitled to it, as you are. That's exactly what the Weekly Connect is all about. It's your views in your words. Now, there's more to come from Stephen, Danny and Christine later, as they take on a rather difficult topic of mental health and sight loss and the link that exists between both. Last week, the trio discussed white canes, of course, and how others might feel about them. Carol, who's a trustee of Galloway's and also an RNIB Connect community member, told me about her thoughts on using a cane in her local area.
I've had sight loss since the age of 40. And although I was struggling, I have retinitis pigmentosa, and although I was struggling to get about, I did manage. And then I realised I was losing confidence, so I got my first guide dog. And when I was training, the trainers take you around your own area. And it didn't upset me, but it was very interesting too. People and neighbours were coming to their gates and saying, "Oh, Carol, have you gone blind? Have you gone blind?" "No, no, but I need some extra help getting about." Now, I've used both white cane and I've worked with a guide dog. I find people are more comfortable with me, with my dog, than with my white cane. They really don't know how to cope with me, with my white cane.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean they don't know how to cope?
Okay. I think I must look a bit like an alien going along.
Right.
Swishing this white cane, trying to miss wing mirrors on cars and litter on the pavement and that. I possibly do present quite a funny picture. And I'm aware of people approaching me, but not knowing what to do. So I found myself now, I flatten myself against the wall and say, "She wants to come past, I'm not very good with this." Now, on another note though, I walk to a letterbox, and quite often I can negotiate this letterbox, but it's on a very, very busy corner. And sometimes I'm a little bit frightened that if I go off that curb, I'm going to be under a car. So I take my time. And that's what is interesting. I kind of hang about a little bit till I more or less think I know where I am. But what is nice, people will come up and say, "Can I help you? What are you looking for? You know, do you want to cross the road?" And I said, "No, I want to try and find the letterbox. I'm not locating it today." Now, some will say, "Oh, would you like me to post that for you?" But interestingly, a very nice gentleman got hold of my white cane and kind of led me to the letterbox holding the other end of my white cane, which I thanked him very much. I thought it was lovely. He perhaps was embarrassed about getting hold of me, he perhaps didn't know. There's still not enough awareness out there. I mix in many, many groups with sighted people. And I find now I tell them, you know, if I need some help going to the toilets or getting a drink, I actually say, "Do you mind if I hold your arm?" And then I can tuck in a little bit behind you. And then, you know, if you tell me any steps up or steps down.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I find most people are very good at telling me steps up, but they forget to tell me the ones going down. I don't understand that.
Thanks for sharing your thoughts, Carol. Now, Danielle, one of the big features of the event was a chance for RNIB Connect members to question RNIB staff and local organisations about the services that they offer.
That's right, yeah. It was interesting to have a bit of a live Q&A just to make sure that everyone kind of understood the current state of RNIB, but also, like you said, just about other services that are available in the Northwest as well.
Well, let's hear some of the questions that the audience asked.
We had a couple of questions, one from Maureen. So Maureen would like to know about Telephone Connect. So what can people expect maybe from the telephone support groups? I think Carol's a big fan of this, aren't you, Carol? Talk and support. Yeah. Carol's involved in everything. So talk and support is something RNIB offer as a telephone befriending service. So if you have a particular interest, I know, for example, we have gardening groups, photography groups, knitting groups. You can get together over the telephone with five or six people once a week for an hour, and you can have a chat with these people on that chosen topic. I'm sure people branch off in all directions, and maybe you have chats about other things as well. But it's a good way of, good way of connecting with people without leaving the comfort of your own home. Carol, do you want to say anything about it?
Well, I take part in, and I'm also a volunteer, supporting the talk and support services at RNIB. And the ones that I find are absolutely brilliant are the tele befriending groups. Now, they run for 1 hour every week. Sometimes you can choose your times with Monday to Friday between 9 till 5. So how it works is, if you wanted to try it, somebody will ring you back. You can ring the free phone. Sorry, I'm talking locally here. Sorry. Yeah. What you could do, you can ring the free phone number for the RNIB, 0303 123 9999, and ask about the tele befriending groups, and they will put you through to the right service. And how it works is, say for example, you say Tuesday's a good day at 11 o'clock in the morning. This is just an example. At 10:45, you make yourself a cup of tea or coffee, like you're going out to a group, but you don't have to leave your own home, you don't do any dialing on your phone, and it's completely free. There's no cost. So all you need to do is remember your time, make your drink, sit in your chair, wait for the phone to ring, and then you get the opportunity to meet and chat with another 4 people from up and down the country. Now, the groups all vary. So maybe if you'd like a group of maybe ladies and gentlemen, or just ladies, or just gentlemen, or you may want a special interest, which if that's available, that's the one you will try. So basically then, for 1 hour, and no, they don't all speak at the same time, and there is a facilitator on board, so no one person will monopolise it. It's a lovely way of meeting and chatting with some new people from up and down the country who will all have some degree of Kairos. It's tremendously popular, and I think for anybody living on their own, it can just stretch you that little bit, you know, to hear how somebody else has perhaps coped with some situation that's arisen. And, you know, it's something to look forward to, and you don't need to leave your own home. So out of all the services on telephone ones, I know there is time to talk, and that's a special one, and that's when you have time, you can ask about that one. But for a weekly one, I'd go for the tele befriending. It's absolutely excellent.
Thank you. Thanks, Carol.
In relation to telephone services as well, obviously Carol mentioned the helpline there, and I'd encourage you to use that number for anything, in the sense that that would put you through to an RNIB advisor, and they can then direct you to anything that you're making an inquiry about. So always bear that number in mind if you're not sure, if you're looking for the answer to a question or you're not sure how to get connected. But also use the local network team here to connect you as well, because they have lots of resources and contacts as well. But there's specifically, if you call the helpline and you're looking for certain specific advice, they then put you through to a sight loss advisor. So if you were looking for quite detailed advice about your eye health, your eye condition, for example, around your eye health, or you were looking for specific information around welfare or employment or any legal aspects, any of these specific issues, they have more specialist advisors that they can then put you through for. And I want to just make a plug at this point. There's one really excellent telephone service as well. If you require that at any stage in your life, or you know somebody that may benefit from that, obviously the telephone services that Carol are talking about are excellent, and they're a kind of social support, but they provide that kind of practical, emotional support for people. But if you need a step up from that and you need more counselling support, if you're having an emotional or mental health issues that you feel you'd really benefit from talking them through with somebody, There's really an excellent telephone counselling service as well, which I'd highly recommend. Thanks.
Brilliant. Does anyone have any more questions? Anything you want to direct towards RNIB or, to, like I said, to any of the other speakers that we had this morning?
Just wondering, is there any kind of courses that, if not necessarily run by RNIB, but that they might know about, that can help develop new skills for people? Because I was like stuck into being an accountant and I've had to give that all up because of the volume of work involved on a computer that involves memory. So it's not something that I might be able to go back into, but I'm quite happy to do it to kind of, you know, develop new skills in a different area, completely different. But is there any kind of courses that you can, or kind of like take it from there, if you know what I mean?
Right. There isn't a course as such, but we can certainly inquire what there is available through other local societies. Yeah. But in terms of using the equipment, we can point you in the right direction to get a full equipment assessment, which would maybe help you with things as well. But obviously the memory issue, there's not a great deal around that other than using technology to try and make notes that you can refer back to. But we can certainly point you in the right direction.
Even if it's like referring onto courses in, say, Oldham College, because they do a variety of courses and it is a good college, but then maybe let me know what help I can get doing a course that other people do that are cited, because at the moment that seems a bit daunting for me to do, try and pick up some new skills.
Yeah.
But I have done touch typing when I was a child at school, and I think it's something I could develop to maybe do, you know, a possible future job.
The way to get around that is to get your local college to send you out their prospectus in a format that you can read. Yeah. And then if you choose the course that you want to get onto, we could certainly help you in discussions with the college about making sure that you have the right equipment in place and the things that you needed to be able to do that course, as opposed to actually referring you to a course.
Yeah.
I went to Trafford College last year and did a level 3 in Swedish massage and a level 3 in beauty techniques and health and safety, and I got 2 distinctions. And in terms of the help, the main things what they did, which was helpful for me, was anything that went on the PowerPoint, I had copies of all the PowerPoints on paper.
Right, up to your and, mouth,
sorry, I had copies of all the PowerPoints on paper and made sure, like, any information that was going to be put on the board I had in front of me written down in a large font, so I'd have it at least like size 25 font. And I also had I'm just trying to think what else. Yeah, all the routines, the massage routines for the different parts of the body, it was all written down ready for me, so I tried to like write it out to learn it. And another thing that had was helpful was they said to me, if you want font size over the size of 25, you need to have a reader for the exam. So my massage teacher was my reader in the exam. And I'd never had a reader before, but obviously it worked and I found it helpful. I wasn't sure, because of the memory thing, how easy it would be able to do once they read the questions, whether you'd be able to recall them back. But they insisted the exam board, because it was City and Guild, said you need to have a reader for the exam. And it ended up working well, and I'm really pleased.
Yes, well done. Well done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that was quite lively, Danielle. A real connecting session, if ever there was one. Does this happen at each event? Because I know that these events happen around the country.
It really depends on the people who want to organise the events, to be honest. If people have a preference of inviting RNIB staff along, then they're more than welcome to do so. But not everyone's interested in that, so no, it doesn't always happen, but can do if you wanted to.
Okay. Well, let's get back to our debate that we were hearing earlier with Stephen, Danny and Christine. One topic that is quite difficult to talk about, but is also often not talked about enough, is mental health and sight loss, and in particular, the link between. Now, Stephen led off with his feelings and personal experiences on the topic.
I'm quite willing to share that I, in, well, probably 2009-10, for the first time ever, suffer from depression. It was because I got my sight had closed out, and I started getting I wear hearing aids as well, and my hearing started to be poor, and I was struggling, and I I did get quite depressed. I got treated for depression, a mild depression, but nevertheless depression. And again, through family, friends, my work, everybody was so supportive. So I got counselling through work. I got help through friends, you know, taking me out, making sure that you would do all the things that you need to do. You need to be positive. You need to go out walking. You need to carry on with your life, even though you don't feel like you want to do some of these things. They are lots of friends who push me to do that. So, and I thought I was the most positive person. Anybody, you know, you talk to knows me and they would think, well, no, that's not Stephen. But it did happen, and it can happen to anybody. And probably Danny knows more, you know, in the line of work he's done, he probably knows more than we do that.
Yeah,
how easy it is just to slip into that. And you know, and it took 2 years to get back to the way I am now again. You know, it's
really hard.
So I put that down as an experience, and I think if it can happen to me, it can happen to most people if circumstances warrant it.
It can happen to anybody. Can happen to anybody. You could fall downstairs, you could slip over your office chair, knock your head, and then you're blind forever. And I think that's, most people don't ever comprehend how suddenly it can happen. Certainly it happened suddenly for me. I was coming back from my aunt's funeral and I went blind in moments. I don't mean minutes, I mean moments. My husband said to me that he hadn't seen a motorway sign. What did it say? And I said, I can't see the sign. And it was just like a snowstorm in the dark, in the fog, and then suddenly it was complete blackout.
Did that affect you? Were you depressed? Did you fight it? I mean, did you think, well, I'm going to sort. You know, you sound a very positive person anyway. So I'm wondering whether it's bound to get you down. But how much did it get you down? Did you decide, well, you know, I'm quite philosophical about this, I'll work my way through it? Or did you think, poor me, or what did you do?
Well, I think you've just picked up two very important adjectives. I am a positive person and I am philosophical. And also being interested in homeopathy, although I hadn't qualified as homeopath then, we always think, how does this condition limit you? And what purpose is it serving when it limits you? And that sounds a bit strange, I guess, to most people.
Yeah, you might have to explain that.
Well, for example, I realised that having spent all my life having to produce masses and masses and masses of paperwork at very short speed, often having worked in quite dangerous places with rather difficult people doing quite odd things from time to time, at least I never needed to write another report on a plane or with jet lag ever again. So there was something positive in it. And I also realised something which a friend of mine, who was a German anthropologist, said to me in Pakistan 30 years ago. And she was interested in I Ching, and she did an I Ching reading for me. And mine came out as Daughter of the Wind Who Blows Away Injustice. And I thought, right, let's just think about this. So having had a terrible shock from Wigan Infirmary that nothing could be done, and treated rather brutally, I feel, but it was 17 years ago, I think people would be kinder now. Having sort of, there's nothing we can do, right, you know, off you go then, Chuck. I decided I would do whatever I could. And eventually, as I said, was treated by a homeopath in London, got some of my sight back, which is terrific when you've been completely blind and flat on your back in a dark room in the extremities of pain, unable to walk for 3 years. To get some sight back is marvellous. And then to be able to walk, albeit only a bit and with a stick, was a terrific achievement. And from there, I went to the Lakeland Homeopathic College and started the long road back. I'll never be back to where I was, but hey, whoever will be. Every day you're older and not what you were the day before. I went there, I graduated as a homeopath, which was terrific. I decided I would take my local council on about the way disabled people were treated, and I did. And I channeled a lot of that rage, which is depression turned upside down, yeah? I channel a lot of that anger, what had happened to me, into positive energy, into making things better for other people as far as I could, within the limitations of whatever anybody's able to achieve. Mm. And then after 4 years on the council, I decided, I've done enough of this now, and I don't think I'm paid enough, really, for what I have to go through with extra pressures in put upon me in terms of disability. So I stood down and continued going to the Lakeland College of Homeopathy until my late husband died. And now I do all sorts of other things. And like Stephen, I try and raise awareness for disabled people and about disabled people, and especially in terms of societal attitudes and how they must change, because it is that which disables us further, and in some cases disables us completely. Mm-hmm. If people could just be a little bit more practical and a bit more commonsensical in addressing the issue, instead of, we don't know what to do, so let's not do anything, people could just ask you, what help do you need? And very often it's something quite small, which is just taking by the arm and saying, the platform you need is just 10 yards away this way, rather than saying it's over there, love, which now means you could go under a train as you fall off the platform. Well, that would solve the problem, but perhaps a little messily, and undoubtedly would inconvenience a whole lot of other people whose trains would now be late. But there you are. But that's what I did. I'm not saying I never got fed up. The shock of it and the horror at the way I'd been treated actually gave my husband a heart attack. And he died. Yeah. And this often happens to carers. The stress is often on the carer because they often see the injustice more, and certainly they have to do a lot of the sorting out of things for the person they look after. And perhaps that's something that Danny might like to pick up on. The stress that there is for carers as well as yourself, because the carer often dies before the cared for person because they are worn out.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Go on, Danny.
Yeah. And I agree with what you're saying, the carer could be gone before us. One point is, I think I'm very, very pleased to see Christine and Stephen fighting against depression.
Thank you.
For that means I'm trying to carry in, so doing carrying in as normal as possible the daily life. And for myself, I think I'm going to make the most of it.
Yeah.
I got my eyesight for the time being, little bit I got. And I'm going to break off from society or from outside world. I'm trying to take the opportunity to know a bit more against society and the outside world, till I, at the end, not what can happen. If I need, I lose my sight, or have to use a cane. Well, yeah. Thank you very much.
It's one of those scenarios, isn't it, where you think there are lots of people who are far worse off than yourself. In a way, you're healthy. You can enjoy a reasonable lifestyle, and I tell a story when I go and do my guide dog speaking, and I ask the children to close their eyes, and I say, well, think about going home, and think about you go into your house and your mum's cooking your favourite meal, and it smells just as good with your eyes closed, doesn't it? And I also say, well, and you go up to your room and you put your favourite music on, and it sounds just as good with your eyes closed. And then you go down and you eat this meal, and it tastes just as good with your eyes closed. So, you know, there are so many things that you don't miss out on. Just the one thing you do miss out on is just you don't see people and you don't see situations. So, in a way, I find that that positive side of it, the children come up with some wonderful questions about, you know, being blind. Well, you know, how do you manage to feed yourself and et cetera, et cetera. And so it is, you know, I mean, it's obviously gone away from talking about depression and mental health issues, but it all comes down to having a positive attitude, I think, and And I lost my positive attitude at that certain stage in life, and luckily I found it again, you know. But it doesn't happen to everybody.
Yeah, I think you've just got to dig deep within yourself and find what you're good at and what you like doing. And if you can radiate that to other people, it's amazed what will happen to you. I thought when I retired from the council that would be the end of my voluntary work, but I find I'm being asked to help with all sorts of things all the time. I became a school governor, and people said, how can you be a school governor when you can't see? And I said, well, all you have to do is listen to other people and occasionally chime in at meetings. You may not be able to read the minutes. On the other hand, this may be a blessing in disguise. And I was, in the end, a governor of three schools, which is quite unusual. Most people be a governor of one, at the most two, and I became the governor of three. And it was a case of pushing away responsibility and pushing away involvement. And I can't really think of what else to say, really. Besides, it is a blessing in disguise. It's like Jilly Cooper used to say, if your husband leaves you, at least you never need to watch Match of the Day again. And if you can find something good about losing your sight, and there will be, for instance, you don't need to read minutes again, you don't need to write reports again, there's always something positive about it. I hope that's not too facetious.
Yeah, can it always reminds me of a story that and I have two lovely granddaughters, and one, we were travelling back in my daughter's car back from Derbyshire over via Macclesfield, and there was a beautiful sunset, and my daughter said to Hannah, my granddaughter, look at that over there, over that, and she said, isn't it beautiful? And she put her head on my shoulder, and I choke up every time I see it, and she said, yes it is, but I wish Grandpa could see it.
Oh, how lovely.
You know, and I thought, whoa, that did me then. So, you know, we are lucky in so many respects. And I think you've just got to get on with life and be positive, I think. And that's what I intend to do. I'm going to enjoy my retirement and learn to play the ukulele and go on my cruises and do everything I want to do. And you know, you push the boundaries as far as you can.
Can I add another little positive note? I ran a free homeopathic clinic for the victims of Allied bombing in the tribal areas of Pakistan in 2011, and then I was asked to go back and do it the following year. And the first time I did it for 6 weeks, and the second time I did it for 3 months, and that's partially sighted. And I've just had a phone call the week before last to say, Mama, which means auntie, when are you coming again? So the game's not over, you know, the game's not over. Mm. And people say, you did what? You went to the tribal areas of Pakistan, which has been at the height of the fighting, and you run a free homeopathic clinic there. How does it work? And I say, by the grace of God, basically, a lot of good luck.
I'm probably a lot of help from people.
I still got a bit of eyesight, but I don't do think what's going to happen when I lose my eyes. That's all. It's very tough. What I heard, what I've seen. You put yourself in a dark room. You still open your eyes, you can't see anything there. I don't want to see that. I hope there will be something that will come out with and try to repair our damaged eyes. Thank you.
Danny, Stephen and Christine talking there about the difficult but important topic of mental health and sight loss. It was a very brave conversation, I think, Danielle.
It definitely was, yeah. And also, like we said before, it's quite an emotive subject. So well done for speaking about it, because I really think more attention needs to be brought to the subject.
Well, after such a deep and meaningful conversation, one thing that is guaranteed that we had to do, and it would also cheer us all up, was have a bit of a friendly meet-up at the pub. And that's exactly why Gerard Jepson wanted to grab me at the event for a quick word.
My full name is Gerard Jepson, and I'm from Oldham.
Well, lovely to meet you. You want to tell us a bit about your visually impaired pub club, is that right?
That's
is that what it's
right. Exactly, spot on. And we meet the second Tuesday of every month at a place called Upsteps in Oldham, which is a Witherspoons place where they do food as well. But it's a very welcoming place, and I think it'd be a good thing for people who maybe don't know about it, and they might be on their own, and would like to go out and meet people. And we want anybody who's visually impaired, or who knows somebody who's visually impaired, and tell them about it, to be quite welcome to come and join us.
So what kind of things do you do? And I know you're in a pub, so I can guess some of the things you do, but what kind of stuff do you... what do you get up to? What do you talk about?
Well, we all talk about different things. You might want to talk about something, you've got something arranged, and you could tell other people, and they might join your group. So it can sort of spread wings of other groups, and it can be useful in that way. And also, it's nice to meet new people and get to know people. And we always have a good tin wag and a good laugh. We all enjoy ourselves.
And can you tell me, for those who want to get involved in it, I mean, is there a contact person that we can get in touch with? I mean, is there something on Facebook you do? How do you get the word out there?
Well, we are on Facebook. It is the name of the group on Facebook. I can contact Michael Allen, who is on Facebook in Oldham. And you can find Michael Allen a number of ways. Through St. Vincent's group, you can find him that way. The very important pub group, that's what he calls it.
Well, it's not visually impaired, it's very important.
Well, it's both, it can be both, really, can't it?
Yeah.
It's really visually impaired pub group. But I call it very important people, because all of us are very important to each other.
Absolutely.
And I think it would be a good idea. I hope that's useful, what I told you.
Very useful, and I think other people will be very pleased to hear about club and Oldham.
You might perhaps want to get in contact with me. They're quite welcome to... I'm quite welcome to pass on any information on, because there were some people who not got the facilities for Facebook, but they're entitled to just come same as anybody else. They can ring me, Gerard Jepson, telephone number 0161 682 8499, and I will give them any details they would want to know that I can possibly pass on to them, and details of how to get there.
Lovely to talk to you. Thanks for your time.
Nice to talk to you. And I'll keep listening to Connect Radio.
Good man.
And all the best to everybody out there.
Thanks, Gerard, and all the best to you too. That sounds quite pleasant, doesn't it, Danielle?
Yes, it sounds amazing, to be honest. What better way to meet up than go to the pub?
Yeah, exactly. I love when I said to him, you know, so what do you do at the pub other than drinking? He said, well, we do plenty of that, but we also eat. And talk. Love that. Well, listen, we're almost out of time, but I know you got a chance to grab a few people to find out what they really thought of the event. Here's what they had to say.
I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Yeah, first time we've been, and absolutely fantastic. You've done a great job, you people. You volunteers are absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, we've done really well. We've learned a lot and that, and made a lot of new friends. And it's been a lot better, not than we expected, but more than we expected, I must admit.
Thank you very much for the effort that you've put in. We've really, really enjoyed it. Brilliant. You're bringing a bit of my confidence back now.
Fantastic.
Because I lost a lot. But I'm really grateful to what you've done.
Excellent. We can't praise it enough. And the volunteers and everyone has been so helpful. Very, very good. Yes. Very, very good.
I just want to know, how have you found today, and what was your favourite bit?
I really enjoyed it all, but I did particularly enjoy the extent drama, because I've not done drama for, well, ever, to be honest. And it was good, silly fun, which I thoroughly enjoyed. Can you tell everyone what you've just won, Rick?
Mitch. Oh, sorry. Mitch. Hello there. I'm Richard. I just won the prize for the Christmas jumper competition at the RNI RNIB North West Connect event at Windermere Manor Hotel.
How have you enjoyed the weekend so far?
Yeah, it's been really good. I really enjoyed the Extant workshop and this afternoon, and the blind tasting was a real good fun. Had a good laugh with that, and looking forward to the entertainment tonight and the quizzes tomorrow and the karaoke tomorrow.
Brilliant. Important that we all get together?
I think it's good. It helps one another. We pay support. Each of us, we share our stories and we sort of inspire and empower each other. So it's good to make new friends, and I've enjoyed the Extant workshop and doing quizzes, and looking forward to the entertainment tonight and tomorrow night.
Yeah, I just want to say, just because people have sight loss, it might be a disability, but at the end of the day, we all still want to have fun and get together and have events like this.
Liz, would you like to say anything about the weekend?
Just fun being with people who get you. You don't have to explain anything, and just to get on and enjoy, have a laugh, and just laugh about things, really.
Brilliant.
Yeah, just connect with people.
I think it's really important we get together because people can share their knowledge and their experiences with technology with each other, as well as gaining new lessons and new information from a day like today. That peer sharing and that peer support with technology is really, really important. So I think that's a really great reason to get together on something like this.
Thank you. I think it's been a great weekend. It's been my first one. I definitely would come again for the different people I've met from all over the place, and I've had some help with technology, which was great.
Would you like to say anything?
Yeah, I've really enjoyed this weekend. It's a good chance to get away, have a break, be around good friends, good company, have a good time, enjoy ourselves. We've got lots of activities. Got the drama was good fun, and looking forward to the entertainment, and enjoyed the wine tasting and things last night. So yeah, it's just a lot going on in a short space of time, but we're enjoying it, and yeah, hopefully do it again next year.
Brilliant. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone who welcomed me personally, and also a massive thanks to Danielle and all of the wonderful people involved in making the RNIB Connect Northwest event such a fabulous day and indeed weekend. What was your highlight, Danielle?
Well, other than obviously all the eating that was involved, I have to say that welcoming Extant Theatre Group along to do a workshop was definitely one of the highlights for me. Such workshops exist because it helps us to build confidence and also have a right laugh, which is what we did in that workshop. It was great.
Yeah, a lot of people enjoyed that, certainly, as we just heard there. And if people want to find out how they can get involved with RNIB Connect in either the Northwest or indeed anywhere in the country, because, of course, RNIB Connect is UK-wide, what's the best thing for people to do?
So you can always email us. So the national team can be found at connect@rnib.org.uk. Or the Northwest team can be found at connectnorthwest@rnib.org.uk.
Seems really simple. Well, thank you, Danielle, and thank you so much for being on our special shows.
Thanks for having me, and again, thanks to everyone who took part in Windermere. Let's hope we can have more fun-filled activities next year.
That is it for the Weekly Connect this week. Check out our podcast on iTunes and anywhere you get podcasts. And remember, when it's 1 p.m. on RNIB Connect Radio, it's the Weekly Connect. Thank you for listening. And Merry Christmas.